From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us as we move on into the summer. Our Catholic schools are going to open on August the 17th, so prayers for another great school year. We'll see. You know, some are able to open in person. Some, the vast majority, at least for the time being, will be virtual, as they call it, distance learning, but with a hope to shortly go back to in-person schooling as well. Well, we're pleased to be joined by Nicole Zamora, who's the Community Outreach Director for Catholic Cemetery and Funeral Services, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services. I mix those up, Nicole.
It's a tongue twister.
That's right.
Yes.
How are you?
I am doing well, enjoying the heat, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yes.
It's been a beautiful last few days, but of course I'm saying that from the comfort of inside.
That's right. Yeah, it's interesting because I love the heat. I grew up in the valley, and I love the heat. And my wife's from Montana, and she's gotten used to it. But
yes, that is a good way to put it.
I suppose I should go up to Montana in the winter when it's 40 below and see, and have her say, "How do you like this?"
How do you, right? Yes. But I'm sure that's why she moved out here to California, right? We can't complain.
Yes, indeed. Well, you got a big event coming up very shortly.
We do. We wanted to, we know so many people are at home and being safe, but there's still so many, questions, so many things to think about during these COVID times. And so we're putting together Thursdays in August at 6 p.m. a four-week webinar series helping aging parents plan past retirement in a COVID world. So, Bob, so many of us plan, up until retirement. We have it good. We've met. We've done all the things. And then we're like, oh, wait, what about all these other things that come, after retirement? What about all these things that come, towards our end of life, right? So right. We thought we would get some community partners and do a series of webinars so everyone can do these from the comfort of their homes. And it starts, the very first one is Thursday, August the 6th. And we will have Erica Caldwell, and she's a community liaison from Bristol Hospice. And her topic is, when is the right time for hospice? And she'll be diving in a little bit deeper as to, what is hospice? Is mm-hmm. that a death mm-hmm. sentence, right? Like, what does it mean? Why am
right.
I, why would you even bring that up with me? And Erica, has been in the senior industry for quite some years, and she's going to just share her experience with folks. She travels around the region when travel was a thing. So right now she's virtually traveling around the Sacramento region to kind of help folks understand, what is hospice, explore the philosophy and the origin of it. Mm-hmm. Who makes this decision? Who decides, right, that hospice is what's the next step?
Yeah, so many, hospice, like you say, it's an end-of-life decision. It's one of those. It's such a wonderful program, and so many wonderful volunteers involved in it, and wonderful professionals. And yet, at the same time, it can be terrifying.
Right? Yes. Because again, you hear that word, and you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So a wonderful part about Erica is that she will advocate and educate on the benefits of hospice. Not only as, what her role that she plays there at Bristol, but actually as an active participant in end-of-life planning. And she'll be sharing her experience as she recently lost her mother during this COVID pandemic. Mm. So she's going to speak a little bit about that. So I think, the listeners will really get to know her, and we'll have question and answer towards the end of that Thursday, August 6th. When is the right time for hospice? Virtual seminar.
And what time is that again?
6 p.m.
6 p.m.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've made it kind of easy for everyone. You know, just lock in Thursdays at 6 p.m. You'll be, you know, sitting in front of your computer or on your smartphone or tablet. And we're trying to make it as easy for folks. So to register, you just go to our website, which is cscssacramento.org/events. And you will see the link right there to register for the Go To webinar. If anyone has questions, they're welcome to call me. Probably the easiest way, and I can get them registered as well, which is 916-840-2138. So that's week one of this four-week series. The next week, we will be hearing from Justin McFarland. He is the senior citizen lawyer, and he's an attorney in Sacramento, mm-hmm. and he'll be talking about what does an estate plan look like. And, you know, what does that even mean? So, you know, estate planning for seniors includes not only knowing who will inherit your stuff when you die, but having a comprehensive plan in place so that, you know, your family and you can be rest assured and know who will take care of you when you get sick, right? What happens when you're no longer able to make those decisions by yourself? What, you know, what kind of going through and talking about trust, right? Advanced health care directives, durable power of attorneys, your HIPAA release form, your pulse. So all, you know, all these words that I'm throwing out, Dustin will be walking us through and letting you know why it's a good job, why it's a good thing to get all your affairs in order, right? While you're in sound mind, you know, you're kind of walking through this. And Dustin specializes in helping older adults. So, you know, of course, he's an estate planning attorney for anyone at any age, but his specialty is really helping seniors. And helping them navigate through that end of life journey.
It's so important. It's again things that many of us avoid. Oh, that's down the road. Yeah. I don't want to think about that now.
Yes.
And yet, tomorrow's never promised.
Exactly.
It says
right?
that right in the Bible. I think somewhere in the Bible it's in there.
You know what? I think it does. Yeah. Right. And not that we want people to live in fear, right, Bob? But it really is just about you have time right now. You're at home. You know, these are the times to gather things up or to really just learn more. I think, you know, if anything good that's come from this COVID pandemic is, you know, the different videos that I've watched, the different things that I've learned to do because we're staying safe. We're, you know, staying within our homes and our communities and you know, so why not learn something new? So this is a nice free, did I mention the four-week seminar or virtual series was free, and you're going to walk away with all this information.
You don't even have to walk away because you're already home.
Yes. So you'll just close that laptop. Yep.
Yeah.
Then the third Thursday will be Beth Noseworthy. She's the executive director of Live Well at Home by Eschaton, powered by Honor. So Live Well at Home has, you know, that lovely nonprofit Eschaton behind it, and then powered by Honor, which is another one of their companies that, you know, really kind of taking all this expertise and allowing the folks that Live Well at Home to help care for your loved ones. So, you know, what does that even mean? You know, maybe it's a husband and wife situation, and you're just now starting to feel overwhelmed or lost in regarding how to care for your spouse. Or you're, you know, an adult child, and you're having to care for mom and juggle work and juggle your kids. And what does this look like, right? What does needing help even look like? So Beth will kind of walk us through what does that mean? What, you know, how much, what am I committing to? What does this look like? And so, you know, another part of it too is really when the aging family member or loved one can't live safely on their own anymore, right? How do we get them help as well too? And so she's just going to, you know, help us with what live well at home does, and, you know, what does that mean? When is the right time? How do I know? What can I do? And, of course, we'll have some questions and answers in there as well.
Very good. Well, you're really lining them up.
I am. I think this is great. I love it, first of all, that all these, community partners of ours have said, hey, we are seeing this too. We're seeing that folks are asking us about all these different parts of end of life. And so wouldn't it be great if we came together in a nice series where people could, you know, kind of learn. So we didn't want to overwhelm anyone with us all speaking, you know, in one-hour webinar. So we thought, you know, a little bit each week will help you to be able to kind of understand, have that moment to ask questions, and know that, we're all here to help you travel through this journey. So, of course, the fourth and final week is us at Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, right? We are the final part of that end-of-life planning. And so what we will be doing is we will have a panel discussion on why you should make your final wishes known, right? Like, why is this important? Why aren't I saying, you know what, the kids will take care of me. They'll figure it out. They could do what's best for them. Bob, especially, you know, for us that are Catholics, we really want to be able to have those final rites, right? The beautiful three rites, which is our vigil, our funeral mass, and our graveside committal. And so we will walk through that. We will have a funeral director answering questions and kind of leading part of this panel discussion. We will have one of our community liaisons who travels around to different parishes and speaks to different groups. We will have a family service advisor that, you know, helps folks as they're coming in and kind of sharing a little bit about, well, what's the difference when I haven't planned to, what's the difference when, you know, my wishes are known and my plan is in place. We have plenty of stories that I think I've shared with you in the past where we have families come in that have lost someone, and we're sitting there with the family, and we're like, okay, so is it a full body burial or is it a cremation and then a burial? And they're like, two of them say cremation, two of them say full body, and one is totally confused, and that's the tiebreaker, right? So having your plans in place, letting your final wishes be known really is a gift to your family members that you're leaving behind. So it will be moderated by Jerry Delcor, our CEO, and we are looking forward to a robust discussion that day. And then towards the end, we'll open it up for the folks on the webinar to be able to kind of message us or call in with questions. Mm-hmm. And we will, you know, have all these panelists there to help answer those questions.
Boy, that sounds great. So, again, give the contact information so people can sign up. It's every Thursday beginning August 6th, every Thursday in August.
Every Thursday in August beginning August 6th at 6 p.m. So August 6th, August 13th, August 20th, and August 27th. When you come to our website, cscssacramento.org events, it's also on the diocese website, which is scd.org. We have been able to place this on there because the diocese is supporting us 100% in knowing that these are, you know, a great webinar series for folks as, again, they're home and they're looking, wow, what can I do to help my aging parents plan? How do I even begin these conversations? What are the questions? Tell me what I don't know, right? It is limited space, so we are limited on how many people we can get on the webinar, so I would encourage everyone to sign up soon. And we are doing a fun thing. Once you register, we will be sending out a welcome gift. We want to thank people for being on our webinar series. So as you register, we will get some information from you, and within a week, you'll have a nice little gift from all of us, at Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, from Live Well at Home, from the Senior Citizen Lawyer, and from Bristol Hospice.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Yes.
So I have to ask, will refreshments be served?
Refreshments are bring your own. So if you're at home, yes, right? definitely, you know, grab a cup of tea.
Some lemonade.
And have that computer up and ready, and we promise that it'll be some good information that you're taking away with you.
We're with Nicole Zamora, the Community Outreach Director for Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services. Nicole, talk about the cemeteries in general. How has COVID affected, you know, you and the services you provide?
Well, you know, of course, we're following all the CDC guidelines and all those listed by the County of Sacramento and right. And Governor Newsom. And so now, during this new order that is in, funeral masses are taking place outside. So that is very different, right? How does that look? What does that mean? So good thing we have an amazing team of grounds crew, of funeral arrangers, assistants, and directors and that have come together to ensure that your loved one's wishes will still get to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So we can have vigils inside, of course, you know, 6 feet apart, limiting the number of people wearing those face coverings. And outside we can have a little bit more people. Again, we're spacing them away, trying to have them earlier in the morning so that it's not quite so hot. You know, the heat in Sacramento is definitely something, that we have to that we just have to deal with, right? So we're trying our very best here with that heat, but definitely trying to keep people cool and really, again, having those Catholic rites take place, that vigil, that funeral mass, and then the committal. So we want to thank all the priests and deacons that have been able to come out and help us, that are willing to give mass outside at our cemetery grounds here to have folks be able to really send their loved ones off in a beautiful way.
Yeah, you look at some of the obituaries in the paper, and you see because of COVID there will be no services, or because of COVID we may have a memorial in the spring or something, and you just feel so mm-hmm. bad for people, and they don't realize. I mean, even Catholic families probably don't realize, some of them, that what is still available.
Yes, right, and we encourage folks to call. Again, we can be that very first call. We are a mortuary, and I know so many of your listeners, Bob, you know, that's still a message that we have to continue to market and get out there. So we've been cemeteries for over 100 years, but we did just get our mortuary, you know, about 6 years or so ago, mm-hmm. and so folks don't know that, but we are your Catholic mortuary. We can, you know, pick up your loved one once they've passed away. We care for them in our funeral home. And then, of course, we can, you know, help with that vigil, that funeral mass, and then, of course, the final resting place, that committal.
Nicole, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for all you do. This sounds like it's going to be a very interesting four-part series starting August the 6th. And I wouldn't want to miss any of them. And it's so easy. You don't have to drive anywhere. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to dress up. Tune in.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Bob, for having me on. Thanks for letting me share with the listeners about this series. Again, if anybody has any questions, please call me directly at 916-840-2138.
Very good. Nicole, God bless your work, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks. That's Nicole Zamora, who is the Community Outreach Director for Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services. As the Congress continues to debate a coronavirus relief or stimulus package, as they call it, the U.S. bishops are urging that certainly they care for the poor and vulnerable in further consideration of COVID-19 relief legislation, something that the bishops feel very, very strongly about, and I think we all do. A very difficult time for many, many people, and they're debating a lot of things, support for businesses, for small businesses, for larger businesses, the economy in general, unemployment assistance, perhaps another stimulus check. Last time they sent out a $1,200 check to most people. There were income requirements, et cetera, but they were fairly generous. A $500 amount for dependents and et cetera. And they're debating all these things and the usual political machinations and trying to figure it all out. But hopefully they all will. They'll all be of like mind that in this difficult time people need help, and they're looking to the federal government especially to help them. So I'm sure they're going to come to consensus. But as the bishops always point out, rightly, that let's really have a special care for the poor and vulnerable, who no matter what the situation is, they're the ones that always feel the impact, the negative impacts of these things more directly than most people do. The Diocese of Sacramento and the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry, the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry are providing parent support, helping to introduce the beauty of theology of the body to our children, Monday, August 17 at 8 p.m., streaming live on YouTube. And you just go to scd.org/parent support, featuring Andrea Arevalo, a youth minister at St. Marish Parish. For any questions on this, contact Jennifer Campbell. Jennifer is at jcampbell@scd.org, or you can call Jennifer directly at 916-733-0135. That's 916-733-0135. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is Julie Sly, editor of Atlet Herald Magazine, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Julie, and always enjoy having Julie on the program to tell us about the latest edition of the Catholic Herald Magazine. Well, the Holy Father has said that, and this is it goes without saying, but we're going to say it: the pandemic is a prime time for conversion. COVID-19 quarantines, lockdowns, and stay-at-home orders are the perfect opportunity for conversion for individuals, for the church, and for government. Pope Francis has said in an interview, he says, what are we living now is a place of metanoia, conversion, and we have the chance to begin. So let's not let it slip from us. Let's move ahead. The pandemic crisis is an opportunity to reflect on how people use their time and resources, how the church responds to new pastoral needs, how society has allowed the economy to be the first consideration when making decisions about people's lives, and how governments still spend billions on weapons when they cannot provide adequate health care to all their people. He was interviewed in the U.S. magazine Commonweal and the British journal The Tablet. Author Austin Ivaray, who's an author and journalist, submitted written questions to the Pope, and then the Pope sent an audio recording of his responses back. He responded in Spanish. He's asked how he is living in the lockdown. The Pope responded, "I'm praying more because I feel I should, and he is trying to focus on the needs of other people because it takes me out of my self-preoccupation." I think that's a very, very good point. It takes me out of my self-preoccupation. How many of us are thinking only about ourselves during this pandemic? How it's affecting me? I can't do this. I can't do that. And I'd like to do this. And not thinking about everybody else. We'll share some more of that a little bit later. We're pleased and honored to welcome in Gabe Maya. Gabe, good day to you.
Hi, Mr. Dunning. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for joining us. Gabe is going to be a senior at Christian Brothers. Do I have that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you are a pitcher on the baseball team. You're a lefty?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I
am. Not fair. Not fair at all. If I could go back and start over when in the crib, I would decide to be left-handed.
Just tie your right hand to the crib and use everything with your left hand.
That's right. We always left. You know, one of my sisters is left-handed. And I'm obviously considerably older than you are. She told me when she was in school early, like kindergarten and first and second grade, that people tried to quote unquote correct her and make her right-handed. Did that ever happen to you?
Well, my dad's left-handed, so I think I got the left.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's weird, though. I do everything else right-handed except play baseball and right.
Really?
So I kick right-footed. I bowl right-handed. So that's pretty much it.
But ever since you started playing baseball, you were a lefty?
Yeah. I've been lefty for my whole life.
Very interesting. I'm ambidextrous when I eat.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I can use both hands. Sometimes I look up at God and I say, why did you even give me a left hand? What's it worth? But you know, the interesting thing, I was talking to my son who loves baseball. He's 15. He loves baseball. That in baseball, your glove hand is the opposite hand. So my glove hand is the left hand, and you know, fielding a baseball is hard work. So I guess your opposite hand can be very coordinated. You just don't realize it when it comes to writing or you know, throwing and things like that. But your glove hand's always your opposite hand.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, like for catchers who are in the big leagues,
yeah,
they have to use their undominant hand to catch 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Exactly.
I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, And they've got to, you know, you have to really coordinate that wrist real fast to turn the glove exactly right to catch the ball. And like you say, it's 100 miles an hour. I don't know how a catcher, you know, I did a little bit of catching in Little League and Babe Ruth League and stuff. And you'd always, man, the ball would just sting your. I don't know how you could have enough padding in there to catch a 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, I think that thing just moves and it moves fast, and you just got to pray to God that you're going to catch it.
Yeah, I just think catching is the tough. That's got to be the toughest job in baseball.
Oh, for sure.
Up and down, up and down, up and down. All that gear, constantly taking your mask off, putting your mask. It's like the catcher has been prepping for COVID
exactly.
Every day with that mask.
He's not the only one with a mask now.
Yeah. So you've got big news.
Yes, I was blessed to receive the opportunity to commit to the University of San Diego to play baseball.
Wow. That is wonderful. A great Catholic university on a nice hill in San Diego. A beautiful campus, a great baseball program, Division I.
And a great Catholic school, so I'm excited.
It's a great Catholic school, absolutely. How did this come about?
Well, due to all this COVID stuff, it's hard for guys right now to get recruited, but all of it's mostly online now, just sending video to coaches. So I had a couple of connections to USD. And I ended up receiving a call from them and started dialogue, sending video, and things actually ended up working out. And now I get to go play baseball there next year.
So are they for baseball? Are they in the West Coast Conference like they are with basketball?
Yes, they are in the West Coast Conference.
Okay, so
LMU, Gonzaga, all those good schools.
USF, St. Mary's, Santa Clara, a lot of good baseball schools. Gonzaga has always been very good. Santa Clara has always been very good. LMU is good. Well, the whole conference is highly respected.
It's a pretty competitive conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you've been to the campus, I presume?
Yeah, so I went to the campus my end of my sophomore year. Then I actually got to play on their field for my travel ball team at the beginning of my junior year, I want to say.
Okay.
So I've been able to actually play on the field, which is nice. And they have a beautiful field there.
Oh yeah, the whole. I covered a football game there last fall, and UC Davis was playing, and just beautiful facilities, a beautiful campus, and you can't beat the weather in San Diego, and
you can't. Oh, not at all.
Man, I think God made San Diego first.
Yeah, maybe.
it's a beautiful city, so. Take us back. We had you on before, but take us back to last spring. Baseball season just beginning for Christian Brothers. You were a junior. You thought maybe you had a team, could win the section championship. A lot of good pieces in place. And then, boom, the whole season just abruptly ends. I mean, just one minute you're playing, the next minute you're not.
Well, I think that wasn't any fun, losing the season and all. But I think the main reason for the season was in order for me to get committed to a college.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really tough figuring out, like, oh, what do I do now that I can't go play baseball? So I just had to figure out how to just throw bullpens to my little brother who stood there like a catcher and just caught the ball, and I threw it as hard as I could. And, you know, I ended up getting that on video and just shooting it out to multiple schools. And now I get to go play at USD. But I guess there's really nothing right now either. I mean, we're shut down for the fall. The high school season's all done till fall. So football, basketball, and baseball all got pushed back into next spring. So I guess we just got to keep our hopes up to have another section championship year in 2021.
So there's all kinds of all kinds of baseball outside of, the school setting. You're talking about travel ball and, there's American Legion. There's college kids have the wood bat leagues in the summer. All that stuff in most areas got canceled. In a few areas, I know in Montana they're playing baseball, and in Portland they're trying to have a wood bat league for some of the college kids. Was there any organized competition that you could play in since last March?
So there hasn't really been, like, tournaments or events where we could go out, but we have been able to, my travel ball team, BPA Folsom, they were able to find us a bunch of games up in Reno, Utah, and locally here in Sacramento with a couple of travel ball teams. So at the moment, it's just a bunch of underground stuff, I guess.
Yeah. So nothing really official, but you're actually able to get some work in.
Yeah, actually able to get some work in. Actually know what it's like to play a game now, I guess.
And the CIF, the California Interscholastic Federation, which controls all the high school sports in the state, like you say, they postponed the fall season. So they didn't cancel it, but they postponed it. And they waived some things that you could do extracurricular type stuff on your own, club teams and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think my plan for this fall is just to stay in the weight room, get big, eat a lot of food, and just try and just play the underground games like I have been doing, and just get ready for my senior season, and then for next summer when I go out to play college baseball.
So. Be a critic of yourself. What do you need to do to compete at the college level, especially the Division I college level?
For me, I believe I just gotta get bigger, faster, stronger. That's one of the things. I think my baseball IQ is very high, but I think just gaining velocity, gaining muscle, putting on some weight is the three main things I need to focus on this next year.
Are you still growing taller?
Hopefully. I want to get to 6'3", but I'm at 6'1", 6'2", right now.
You'll get there.
Yeah, hopefully. Just got to pray.
Get a stretcher. Just stretch yourself out. Yeah.
So, Lord, I get a couple more inches.
So who's your model of a baseball pitcher?
I have a couple models of baseball pitchers. I really like Randy Johnson and Nolan Ryan.
Well, Randy Johnson's about 8 feet tall.
Yeah, he's a big dude, but he was smart though. He knew how to pitch.
And he's a lefty.
Yeah,
I cannot imagine facing Randy Johnson. Absolutely cannot imagine how terrifying. Plus, he was a little bit wild. You know.
Oh yeah! Did you ever hear about that story where he got a bird on the when he's throwing?
Yeah. Go ahead and tell it though.
So Randy Johnson, I can't remember the year, but he's throwing a warm-up pitch. Or it might have been a warm-up pitch, or it might have been a live game pitch, and it's right down the middle, and a bird shoots across, and he nails the bird, and the bird feathers went everywhere, and the whole crowd was in shock. They just nailed a bird in the middle of a baseball game. It was wild.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, he's high 90s, something like that.
Yeah, he was high 90s.
Yeah, sure. And he's what, 6'8", I think.
6'7", 6'8".
Yeah. Oh man,
and he was a big boy.
Yeah. Oh man, it's funny because there are a lot of craftsmen in pitching, but the ones that people seem to remember were the fastball pitchers, going way back, the Bob Fellers, the Bob Gibson, Randy Johnson, just guys that just had the heaters.
Yeah, exactly. I recently just watched a documentary. I think it's on Netflix. It's called Fastball, and it's all about the fastest fastball be ever thrown and how they changed all the measurements throughout the beginning of baseball. It's very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was after Bob Gibson, had a really great season in the 60s, they lowered the pitcher's mound just because of Bob Gibson.
Yeah, I heard about that. And so the cool thing about what they discuss is they talk about the radar guns. So originally they used to get radar guns when the ball was hit home plate, but then over the years the radar gun moved up to the ball coming out of the hand, and that's the 2 miles per hour. So they talk about that, and that's a really cool part of it too.
Wow. So I don't know the very early dimensions of baseball, but as long as I can remember, the mound has always been 60 feet 6 inches.
Yeah, and it still is today.
And it still is today. So that's the one thing they haven't messed with. They've messed with the height of it, et cetera, but they haven't. You'd think, why don't they just make Bob Gibson on the lower pitcher's mound and let everybody else?
Yeah,
it's amazing. Some of these people just had a God-given talent to really throw hard. What's your favorite pitch?
I really like my curveball, but I also enjoy throwing my two-seam fastball, too.
Mm-hmm. Are there, you know, I mean, you hear about, you know, catchers telling the pitcher what to pitch. How much of that at the college level is it going to be the pitching coach calling the pitch?
Well, you know, I think when you play baseball, you got to think to pitch to the batter's weaknesses and know how to not only get strikeouts, but ground balls and pop flies.
Right.
So I think everyone's kind of on the same page on that level. I know catchers call the game, but I know your pitching coach can probably, if they want a certain way, like a certain way to throw to a batter, they'll tell the catcher and they'll relay it in with their signs. But I think the pitcher, the catcher, and the pitching coach all kind of know what they're doing at that level.
Mm-hmm.
They know, because we study and we do film and we learn the percentages. Like baseball today, it's all about percentages. Like, I mean, you could have a number four hitter who rakes the ball to the left side, so why don't we just pitch him outside, you know? So we got to just think, everyone's just going to be on the same page and think of the batter's weaknesses.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. I know I'm guilty as anybody when I see somebody through a two-hitter or a one-hitter, maybe a no-hitter, even a perfect game. First thing I look at is the K, you know. How many did he strike out? And if I see it's low, like, oh, he only struck out four guys and he threw a no-hitter, I'm thinking he must have been kind of lucky in the field. And there may be some truth to that, but by golly, you don't have to strike everybody out. If you just give them stuff they just can't get a good piece of.
Yeah, there's this famous Sandy Koufax quote where he says, baseball got real easy when I just started letting them hit it and trusted the guys behind me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
That was a funny one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've heard that from Little League on, when I was playing, when my kids were playing, when my son was pitching, saying, hey, just throw the ball over the plate and let them hit it, and you trust your fielders.
Yeah, it's nine dudes against one.
Yeah.
You're safe hand.
Exactly. You know, I mean, the notion you got to strike everybody out, and then you start walking people because you're trying to be perfect. And now you've given too many free passes, and if you just put it over the plate, like you say, nine times out of ten, you're probably going to get them out.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what do you anticipate? It's hard to know that you're going to have a baseball season, a high school baseball season this spring.
I'm planning on it, but you never know. Because I remember at the beginning of all this COVID-19 stuff, we thought this would be till Mother's Day.
Yeah, right.
And now we're here, so you can't really know. I just wonder if it'll be gone by November or if it'll be gone after flu season. It's just hard to tell.
Well, the notion of the three-sport athlete is going to go out the window.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember years ago when I was at Davis High School, we had a guy named Ralph Villanueva, and he was the starting quarterback on the football team. He was the number one starting pitcher. He was also the leading scorer, point guard on the basketball team. And he would, if he got a chance, he would, you know, if the baseball and the track meet were going on at the same time, if the baseball field got, you know, or if he wasn't, you know, if he'd been taken out of the game or wasn't the starting pitcher that day, he'd run over to the track and do the 110 high hurdles or something. You know, it was just amazing. All the different things he could do. But now you're going to have all those seasons kind of jammed together, it looks like.
Yeah, my little brother, he wants to play basketball and baseball, but it sounds like basketball and baseball might overlap, so he might have to take his freshman year off and focus on one sport.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the case for a lot of kids right now.
Yeah, and it maybe in some ways it'll open up some opportunities for some of the kids that might not have made the team otherwise.
Very true, yeah.
Yeah, but in some of the, I was reading about some of the really small high schools, some of them that's in California that still play eight-man football or, you know, just because they don't have enough bodies. In most of those schools, everybody plays every sport, you know, and if they move them all together, in some sports, they're just not going to be able to field teams.
Yeah, here in California, it's rare to find a dual-sport athlete or a three-sport athlete.
Yeah.
But I remember about a summer ago, I went to Oklahoma, and these guys, these were big boys, and I'm like, what sport do you guys play? And they're like, oh, yeah, we play football, basketball, baseball, track. Like,
yep.
They did everything, and they were just all-around athletes, where, like, in California, we have more specialist-type athletes.
Yeah, I think that's
focused on one sport.
That's happened a lot, the specialists, where you especially, put it politely, at the elite level, you know, which is where you are, you almost have to specialize if you want to move on to the next level.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can do all three sports and do fine in all of them, but you're probably not going to truly excel in any of them. And it's become a whole industry now in terms of camps and you know, you have your own coaches and all that. But I just think it's so exciting. University of San Diego is such a great academic school. It's such a great Catholic school. And, athletically, I think they have the right mix of, when they say student athlete, they really mean student athlete, you know?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the whole athletic program, every athlete had an above 3.5 GPA.
Yeah, they're
highly educated. And they
I remember talking to their football coach, Dale Lindsay, a couple of times after a game. And last year especially, they had a heartbreaking last play loss to UC Davis on a very controversial call, and which nobody could really decide if it was the right call or wasn't the right call. He could watch the film 100 times and get 50 different opinions. But I talked to him right after the game. And first thing he said, that was the right call. They beat us. You know, no. And I said, this guy is a stand-up guy, you know. No excuses. And I know that goes all the way through that university. You know, so tell us, do you know who any of your teammates are going to be?
Yes, I was actually very excited to meet all of my teammates that are in my class.
Mm-hmm.
So I met about six of them over the phone, and that was pretty cool. And they're all from Oklahoma, another guy from San Diego, Oregon, and then another two of us are from up here in Northern California. And they all seem like great guys, and I'm excited to actually get to meet them in person once we can all do our campus visit in, I think, March.
Wow. And so college baseball now, I mean, they actually have some fall ball, right?
Yeah, so it's fall ball. You take a winter program where it's just in the weight room, and mm-hmm. then you hop right into the spring.
And they generally, the season starts mid to late February. It used to start in January, and then a lot of the northern schools kind of complained that they were at a disadvantage, and so they've moved it back a bit into February. So, have you looked at their schedule? That'd probably be the first thing I'd look at is, where do I get to go?
Yeah, so we get to visit Gonzaga, University Pacific, St. Mary's, USF, Santa Clara, LMU. So we're all kind of around California in the West. So I'm excited to be able to, like, come back up here to Stockton and have
I was gonna say your dad's gonna be able to watch you play a lot.
Yeah, and I also have family in the Bay Area, so when we play USF, St. Mary's, Santa Clara, they'll all be able to watch my game.
So presumably they do the three-game series. You play everybody three games?
Yeah, so it goes Tuesdays a non-conference.
Right.
And then so maybe there's a road trip. We play SDSU, someone local.
Right.
And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we play our conference games.
Yeah, and most leagues seem to follow that schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with, you know, what, 27 league games, 24 league games, something like that. That's great.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that's and usually the good trips happen in the preseason, like in February, where maybe you go to a tournament in Arizona or somewhere else, or maybe you go play Mississippi State three games or something at their place.
Exactly, yeah. Those are all the fun trips where you go down to Ole Miss and play a three-game series before the season starts.
And see how crazy the people are there for baseball.
Oh, Ole Miss is one of the craziest baseball schools you will ever see. Their fans are absolutely crazy.
Yeah, they in some cases outdraw some of the major league teams. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know at Ole Miss, my strength coach used to be the strength coach at Ole Miss, and he said in right field they have what they call the Ole Miss rain.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you're drinking, if it's Gatorade, beer, whatever it is, whenever there's a home run, you throw up your drink. If it's full, if it's half full, you throw up your drink and it rains. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see.
Wow, that's great. Yeah,
he told me a crazy story at Ole Miss where there was a walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. And not only right field threw up their drinks, the whole stadium threw up their drinks. He felt Gatorade splash on him from the dugout. It was pretty crazy.
Oh, well. Well, yeah, it's great if you can play in that atmosphere. And there's some, you know, there's some great spots on the West Coast too, and San Diego being one of them. So, what do you plan to study there?
I plan to go into business.
Mm-hmm. That's a good school for that as well.
It's a great school for business.
So, I gotta figure you still hope to play in the major leagues one day.
That's a dream, but I also like to keep thinking. I also got to get my education at USC too. I'd like to graduate.
Yeah. So, what, you know? I mean, playing in the major leagues is so rare. I mean, just so rare. But what's that take? What's, you know, you're what, 16, 17?
I'm 17 years old.
Yeah. So what's that take?
Well, I think it's just you got to be able to be willing enough to put in that work in your college years and hit your goals,
mm-hmm.
so you can leave college after your junior year and enter the draft. But I think in order to go to the big leagues and in order to go to the actual show, I think you got to be willing enough to sit the bench, go through the minor league system, and just grind and just get through it all. Because, you know, it's a sweet prize once you go through college and the minors and all that stuff that finally be able to be there on the big stage.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's I had a friend that he went to Davis High, went to UC Davis. This was years ago, and I think he got into about four games with the Dodgers, you know, in the late August, September call-up, you know, and it's just and never played again in the majors, but he just cherishes those times, you know. And it's so sad to see all the minor league all these young prospects, hopeful, maybe just signed, and they get assigned to, you know, to the River Cats or generally a lower level than that, and just no baseball at all anywhere in the country for them.
Yeah, that's pretty sad, but I heard a lot of stories of MLB players donating or giving out some of their pay.
Yes, I've heard that too. I think that's wonderful. Really, really nice. Well, Gabe, stay healthy. Keep in touch with us, and I hope this spring I'll be able to get out and watch you actually pitch for Christian Brothers.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks, Gabe.
We'll get you out to the Christian Brothers game.
Absolutely. We'll see you out there. God bless.
All right. Take care. God bless.
That's Gabe Maya, who is a pitcher, left-handed pitcher for Christian Brothers High School. He'll be a senior this year, and he signed with a great Catholic university, the University of San Diego. Gabe, you ever been to the University of San Diego?
I don't think so. I've driven by it.
I covered a football game there last fall, and what a beautiful campus. It's up on a little hill, not a big, there aren't big hills there, but little hill.
Right.
You can kind of look out and see a lot of the city, beautiful facilities, small Catholic university, not a giant student body, but it's Division I baseball. They play in a league with Gonzaga and USF and Santa Clara, St. Mary's, Pacific, Loyola Marymount.
Lots of good schools to go visit.
University of Portland. Yeah, a lot of great. That would be a fun league to play sports in, because you get to see all these cool cities.
Yeah, I know. That's the cool part about it. I playing the junior college, I got to see like one city outside.
I remember, you know, I was a college athlete, and they always talk about home court advantage or home field advantage, that kind of stuff. I love to go on the trips.
Yeah, me too.
I think I played better on the trips because it was just, I was psyched up.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to Texas, or we're going to, we're going to L.A. You know, it was just, you'd get all.
Other than like extreme weathers that you get in one place over another, which will probably be the only, it's really hard for Gabe, is because, 73 degrees all year long in San Diego when he ends up going
by
to like.
By law, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, it's definitely municipal code. Yeah. But if he goes somewhere else, like, goes to Portland and it's really cold, it's going to be like, okay, wait a minute.
Gonzaga and Spokane.
We've got like a minute or so left, but I wanted to think, is there a chance we can petition to get cardboard cutouts of us at the Giants games? I think we should.
We should.
We should get a cardboard cutout of Bishop Garcia at the Giants game. He would love that.
He would love that. The late Bishop Garcia is a huge Giants fan. And he would love that. People in his diocese, the Diocese of Monterey, they would buy him tickets.
Yeah.
But not to buy him tickets. I mean, but take him to a game. I remember interviewing him one time. He says, "Oh, Sunday, I'm, after Mass, we're going to the Giants game. I'm going with some so-and-so, and he just cherished it.
A little radio insider, folks, if you have a guest who you don't think is quite on that day, misdirect was something they care about. Anytime we'd have Bishop Garcia on and he'd be like, "Hey guys, how's it going?" You can tell he's trying to force it. Bob would just be like, "See the Giants game?" And then it would be like, he's off to the races. He's good to go.
No, of course, I had to be sure they hadn't lost.
Right, yeah, of course. Yeah. That could be why he was not really feeling it day, too. But I think we should talk to the Diocese of Monterey and see if they can get a cardboard cutout of him at the Giants games. He would love that.
What Gabe's talking about, for those that don't follow baseball started, they're playing with no fans. And they allowed their season ticket holders to buy cardboard cutouts of themselves, apparently. And is it the actual person, Gabe? So you see what looks like a crowd on TV, and it's cardboard cutouts. So maybe, Gabe, since we're having to do this show virtually, we all our guests are on the phone. Can't we get some cardboard cutouts and put them in the guest chair?
I think we should get cardboard cutouts of ourselves and just call it a day. The other thing I thought about, what would be great to do is, let's say you're pitching against somebody like Clayton Kershaw or somebody like that. Yeah. But you find out they have this uncurable fear of clowns. I would put all clowns in the front, cardboard cutouts. You could really start doing this, in basketball games, they do the free throws and they're waving the balloons and stuff, trying to do the psych out. This could become a thing. Yeah. They should start doing that. If they have a fear of 80s slashers movie, put Jason and Michael Myers and stuff in there.
Very funny. Well, interesting times. But Gabe Maya is that kid's going places. So keep an eye on him. But we'll have to go out to a Christian Brothers game this spring, and I'm sure they're all going to be playing by them, God willing. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain. Praise the God who gives and takes away.